Welcome back to Tumor Board with Hilario and Anish. I'm your co-host, Anish.
And I'm Hilario.
So last time, we did a deep dive into burnout in physicians. So what is physician burnout, the prevalence of burnout, the signs, and the causes of burnout. So today, we're going to extend that conversation. And my first question to you, Hilario, is why does all this matter?
I feel like sometimes we hear a lot about problems that are going on and nobody really says why it matters. But I think, you know, the reasons why burnout matters is not too dissimilar from how, you know, other industries, when they experience lack of morale, how that affects those industries, right? I think burnout, you know, can predispose people to mental health disorders, like we mentioned before, that people can get depression, right? People can get anxieties as a result of burnout. And so it is important to avoid people that, you know, are taking care of patients from getting into those situations, right? And we know that depression also, again, is a risk factor for, you know, another big issue in medicine, which is suicide, right? So that's a big reason why, you know, all of this matters. And people that are burned out are more predisposed to making medical errors. So again, for the safety of our patients as well, we want to be able to understand what burnout is, where it's coming from, so that we can prevent them. We can reduce medical errors, which is one of the big ways that we actually waste money, right, in the hospital, because medical error is one of the cost drivers in healthcare, right? And people get hospital-acquired infections are related to rates of burnout in hospitals. Patient satisfaction. We say part of burnout is that we feel apathetic. We can't really relate to our patients. We don't show any kind of empathy, right? And then we go to rooms because we're overburdened by documentation. Sometimes we don't even make eye contact with, you know, our patients. So patients really come to the hospital and then they leave and they feel like they were just, you know, another like body, right? I just came and just left, right? And I think that can lead to low patient satisfaction. And sometimes with that low satisfaction, patients don't trust you, right? Because you don't really take the time, or you don't really connect with them or empathize with what they're going through. So I think that's another reason why, you know, it matters. If you're a business person, if you're looking at it from a purely business perspective, people who are burnt out, low productivity, right? They don't work in the same way that they can work if they're not burnt out. And there's this idea about presenteeism, people who are present in the workplace, but they're not really doing much. They're just kind of like, you know, chugging along and not really putting their best foot forward. And people who are burned out are actually more likely to call out of work. So absenteeism is related to burnout. And that makes sense, because when people are burned out, they feel like they need a release, right? They need to get away. So if we can prevent all of that, if you're looking at it from a purely business perspective, that's a reason why we should be talking about it. So, you know, on the individual level, the physician's health, the patient care, right? And then on the business level, productivity, there's a lot of reasons why this should really be something that we all care about and try and tackle.
I want to add one thing to what you said, and I only learned about this recently, actually. So your first point about mental health and depression, you know, suicide is actually the number one cause of death in male physicians. And the number two cause of death in female physicians. I'm sure there was a number of issues and, you know, multiple reasons, but
it's a complex,
but definitely, yeah. Right, complex issue. But I'm sure the burnout and the from just the work of being a physician that, you know, is not helping them get better at the very least.
So, you know, just to bring this down to us, right? Like, in what ways have you been affected by burnout? And I can talk about ways that I've been affected by burnout too as well.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this, and I think the first time in my career as a physician in training that I experienced burnout was in my third year of medical school. And I know, it's really early. I did about half of my rotations in one specific hospital. It was the inner city hospital. And it was just totally different than what I had experienced before that. I was in an urban environment. They were all, very lots of patients, understaffed, and just kind of everything that comes with. But this specific hospital, I don't know, something about it. Everyone, I just felt like was not doing well. I never felt like anyone that I was ever making an impact or that I was with or the doctors just themselves were making any impact. Even I know this sounds weird, but even the lighting in the hospital was just like not helpful. And it just made me feel very sad. And like the whole time I was there, and I was there for month after month after month, and this was not my choice. And I just, this month after month, and I honestly, I felt so down, and I was not the only one. There was other people who felt really down as well. And one of the big reasons I took a research year was not for research. It was because I just felt really down. I felt like really burned out by, I had to really question what I was doing and, is it worth it? I really just had to retool myself and get a break. Cause I just could not, I knew that could not apply then. I was just not in the mental state to do it. And I think that was my real first, experience of burnout just extremely early in my training. I would say that
before you move on to this, what do you think was the reason why you felt so burned out in that hospital? Besides just the environment, was it just like the mood of the environment? What really was it?
So I think that definitely played a big role. The environment, the fact that there was just an influx of patients all the time, and you'd always be sending patients out not in a way that you want to. Like they're all, you're still sending them out in not exactly stable condition. They just come back. It never felt like you're really helping anyone. And then on top of that, all the burden of, university hospital, I would do the blood draws, the ultrasounds, you just kind of go and do what you have to do while still taking care of the patients and doing all the other administrative burden. But on top of that, it's like what you mentioned before, that kind of that internal push to do your best, to always be there. And I felt like me, the residents, the other med students, we're just really pushing ourselves to get there really early, to do all these other tasks, to that we hope that our actions actually have an impact. But then there's just constant reminders that they're not. And so then this is a negative feedback loop, and that leads to that kind of misalignment of your expectations and the reality and what you perceive is the reality. Can lead to that burnout. So that was my first experience of burnout. I think in residency, and maybe you can attest to this as well, I think in radiation oncology residency, it's a different form. I think there's this emotional exhaustion. I think that again, that internal drive to do your best, and our workflow is very interesting. It's very unique. You do have to be a number of places kind of constantly, keep on top of all these patients, but you also have to be on all the time because you have a different interaction with a patient. Every interaction is so important, whether you're breaking bad news or you're just treating, like helping their symptoms, or you're telling them the treatment plan, and you're trying to schedule things for them. You just really have to always be on. And I think that takes an emotional, I think that can take an emotional toll, which leads to that physical, that kind of physical toll as well. And I think that I've had to, different rotations are different. Some rotations I feel like that's more than others. But I think that's just kind of a work in progress in terms of addressing that. Right. How about you, Hilario?
Right. I'll probably say that when I started you know, when I started really feeling burnout was in intern year, in the hospital that I did my transitional year at. And I would say it really didn't come to play until COVID really hit, right? So I had done my ICU rotation, but with COVID and the overflow of ICUs, I had to go back to the ICU again, right? But that experience, you know, in the ICU was much different from what it was before COVID. It was tough. It was busy, and you're like always constantly on your feet, like, you know, running around. But there was something about, you know, the ICU during COVID, which was a lot more depressing, right? You know, more patients died every day.
Yeah, you know, that's tough. Because it's really tough.
This was the very beginning of it. And we didn't really know very well how to treat COVID, even the symptoms, right? Like, you know, we're finding out about new symptoms of COVID and the mechanisms of COVID, right? And looking at hospitals from New York, right, who had the first wave of COVID, where we really kind of like, you know, in the beginning, that's where we're hearing a lot about COVID, right, from New York and the West Coast, right? And so reading about what other doctors, you know, are putting out there and trying to, you know, help our patients, right? And, you know, just kind of talking to patients and some of them being in denial that, like, that, you know, COVID is really what brought them in the hospital. And I remember, you know, a patient that spouse was in the ICU from COVID, and he unfortunately got COVID and then decided to go to a concert and then came back within a few weeks with COVID because he didn't think it was a thing, you know. And even when he was in the ICU, you know, he didn't think it was a big deal. And fortunately for him, he made it, but his spouse, you know, didn't make it. And just kind of like that time period itself, just, you know, you're trying to help, right? And then you're looking at society out there and people that you're supposed to be helping are saying that you're not helping. You what you're doing is not, I don't really have that thing, right? How, you know, it just kind of like, for me, that was the first instance of me really getting very disillusioned about what I was doing to help people, right? So it didn't matter what the patient thought, and the patient didn't want me to, some of them didn't even want me to talk to them about, you know, why, what is going on, because it's like, oh no, it's not COVID, it's nothing. But anyway, so that was really where I started really feeling a little bit like some depersonalization, right? Where like I felt like slowly my empathy for some of these patients were kind of like dropping. I could tell that, and I'll come home and I was withdrawn. I really didn't want to, you know, talk to, you know, my wife or anything like that. I just, you know, just take off my clothes in front of the house, right? Because that was the thing that we were doing. Take my clothes off, just put in the laundry, and then, you know, shower real quick and then go to bed.
You know, classic signs of burnout.
So. Yeah, that was the thing. And I was just like, and on top of that, you know, I had done ICU, right? And ICU is a demanding place to be. I'd done ICU. So going back into the ICU again in that time was just kind of like, you know, that's when I really felt it. And, you know, in terms of really, like, when we talk about solution, I don't actually know what a solution would have been for that because we're in a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic, right? You know, it was like, everybody needed to, you know, all hands of that kind of situation. So that was very unique in of itself, but I think it wasn't helped by just kind of the social aspect of the thing that we were treating, right? And then I would say that radiation oncology, like you're right, radiation oncology is different, right? In terms of the vibe, I think that burnout probably looks different in radiation oncology. I think the ways that maybe I've come close to burnout or have been, I felt like I am burnt out in radiation oncology has to do with more about wanting to do more for my patients, but then realizing I can't do it
anymore. Right?
Yeah, and it
does happen.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, a patient has metastatic disease, right? You're helping palliate them, and it's like, oh, can we be aggressive, you know, and try and do this thing? And it's like, this is the point where, like, it won't matter, right? You want to make them comfortable, help them be comfortable, you know, talk to them, right? And like you mentioned, it's an emotional toll on the individual. So I think one of the times where I really started, like, feeling it was when we had a few very young patients. One of them was even a resident that went to the same medical school as me who had cancer. And it just kind of, it just was too close to home to me that, like, I just kind of felt it. So I think, you know, those are probably like some of the instances where I felt some kind of burnout. You have to be like emotionally there all the time, you know, in radiation oncology. So it's different from like, the ICU experience. But I would say part of also picking, I do like the job in that way, but I think that if you are a perfectionist in radiation oncology, you might not be happy. You might not be happy. No, seriously, it's true. Yeah,
I agree. You just won't be happy.
And I think I realized that maybe in PGY3, that you know, you do your best for the patient and you try to learn and be better. But you know, trying to be perfect about everything that you're doing, it doesn't lead to any good place.
Yeah, I wanna add just from what you were saying, you know, there's a few things that I feel like I took from just internalizing everything. Like sometimes one, you have to focus on the small wins. You can't always focus on kind of the big picture, because big picture, there might be so many things going on and you just can't help everything. You gotta focus on the small win. Number two, I think just as human beings, we all want some type of respect or acknowledgement. You know, we don't need to be healthcare heroes or anything, just like, you know, just like a thank you or, you know, acknowledgement that, hey, like we're trying to be helpful and it was acknowledged. And I think, you know, one of the reasons, like we talked about last time, emergency medicine, I don't think they get that acknowledgement from a lot of people always, because there's a lot of, you know, people coming in and out, stresses for the patients have. And the other thing is the feeling of trying to be add value. You want to feel like you're valuable, that you're adding value to the situation. And you want to add value to the patient's health or quality of life. And when you have this drive, well, you can't do it. That does take a toll. And I want to add one more thing is, you know, it reminds me in medical school. So I don't know how you approached your white coat oath, ceremony, like your Hippocratic oath, but, we had this thing where there's a group of us, like 20 med students, and we wrote the oath for our class. And yeah, this was like the first week of school or something. Somehow I was in this group of people. I don't remember why, but it was really interesting. There was one time there was this big debate, and one person brought up, she wanted to bring up self-care in the oath, something along the lines of like, we will take care of ourselves first and then help others. And it was a huge, huge debate. It was like a lot of argument about this. People were like, you know, no, we're doctors. We need to, like, you know, our first priority is other people, not ourselves. But I think as I've gone in training, I always remember that because I realize it is actually so important. Like all this burnout happens, but if you don't have the time or the ability to take care of yourself, you just can't function well, and you can't do your job properly.
Right. I mean, I think this last thing that you're talking about really is all about what your perspective is at, right? So
yeah,
you know, people might say, "Don't put self-care first, right? Like, don't say that we'll take care of ourselves before we have. But the thing is, if you don't take care of yourself, you can't actually help anybody.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
And like when you're in airplanes, right? When they say something and it's in case of emergency, right? No, like in case of emergency, you got to put on your mask first, right? Before, even if you're a child, before you can help your child, because you can't really help your child if you lose oxygen trying to help them, right? That's one of the things, right? Is that you know, saying that I can see how saying that might sound like a taboo in medicine or in medical school. This is
like week one of medical school.
That's probably not gonna fly, you know, for a lot of older physicians and stuff like that. Not to stereotype older physicians, but you know, that old school mentality will probably be like, you know, it's all about sacrifice. And I just see the point of sacrifice a lot, like laying down yourself for someone else's life, even when there might be some harm to you. I see that sometimes as a value, but I think you can sustainably do that for someone, lay down your life for someone if you take care of yourself. So I get that. Do you think that maybe we never really talked about or think about burnout before we go to med school, right? But in medical school, we hear a little bit about it. Do you think that your ideas or your preconceived ideas of burnout actually affected whether you went to RADANC or not?
So I think that it did in a way. I don't think it necessarily was a direct translation, but I think after my experience in third year, and I was thinking about radiation oncology, but with that experience, you know, I was really like, I just need something where I have that balance, where I'm able to have some focus on me, but where I can also make an impact. That was my biggest thing. I want to feel like I'm adding value as well. And I like cancer and all this stuff. But I think in RADANC, you really, whether it's curative sense, a palliative sense, I think that it's there. And I think it's a good work environment. I think we have really awesome people, you know, in our field and kind of everything that it comes with. It seems like, I just think that was something on my head, you know, in my mind, and I think other people as well. But I will say it was definitely, I don't think, one of the first things I was thinking about. And I'm sure not everyone was really thinking about that. You're kind of focusing on what do you like to do? You know, not necessarily will this give you burnout and can you imagine your life, you know, as it is 10 years from now?
Right. I would say maybe I didn't think about it in the sense of like just burnout. I wanted to do something that I really like, which is really important, right? And I think we talked about it, but I also thought about work-life balance and the things that are important to me. And we'll probably talk about this in some of the solutions. One of the things that I valued or I wanted to make a priority was to be in a profession where I can still be in the lives of my children, you know, if I had kids, and also be in the also be there for my spouse, right? And you know, so by that, some specialties, I eliminated some specialties. It was obviously a balance of what you liked and also whether it's going to give you a good work-life balance. If, you know, the life was like, okay, like right average, right? I like this like on average, right? And then the work-life balance is like terrible. It's like, there's no way like I'm really going to, like for me to sacrifice the work-life balance, it has to be something that I'm really, really passionate about and I really want to do, right? So that, for me, I think in my process, I use that to kind of eliminate some specialties. And you know, I ended up on in radiation oncology as a result of that. But so I think it did affect it in some ways. But maybe I didn't really think of it as burnout, you know, avoiding burnout kind of thing. But yeah. So moving on to the solutions. So what are some of the solutions that you think that, you know, will be help for you know, physicians in training and healthcare providers in general. I know this is a very complex issue, you know, but do you have any ideas from kind of our research what might be helpful?
Yeah, I think the first thing really is dealing with the work environment and some of those external factors. You know, leadership in medicine really has to get involved and help be a driver of some of these changes. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be an assessment of some of these underlying drivers of burnout, an assessment of the unique challenges to that specific work setting, that specific practice or hospital. You know, how is the workflow? What is the support staff like? How many patients per nurse, per doctor? You know, is coordinating care very difficult? What are the social challenges of patients that, you know, need to be addressed, and how much time is it being taken away from the physician and the staff? So there really needs to be an assessment of all of this. And then leadership has to help reduce these drivers of stress within the organization. And then ultimately initiate programs such as wellness programs or peer-to-peer networking that help support and pretty much initiate the infrastructure that support and promote well-being. You know, nowadays there is a more emphasis on wellness, and I do see the changes, at least in our own work setting with that emphasis, and even like graduate medical education at large, you know, saying to program directors that they need like one wellness day, you know, in maybe, you know, in like 6 months, but, but there is like something happening. I think there's more research and more work, but I hope that, you know, I see there's a transition from just like, oh, a pizza party to let's like actually see what we can actually do to help people, you know, or help our employed workforce.
I have found, at least when we started, I found our group of residents and like our program that even the way that we've gone about wellness days is much better than when I went to med school. When I went to med school, our wellness day, we went into some kind of conference with like pharmacy students.
That's what we did.
Yeah. And then spent like the whole day talking about wellness. And I'm like, oh my God. No.
It's not wellness, man.
And I'm like, what? I really want to, if it's wellness day for me, I really want to be in the field playing soccer, playing video games, right? Or like going out to
something.
Restaurants. Yeah, something besides sitting in the conference room. And so I think maybe it's changed now in the medical school I went to, because, you know, I think we're improving on some of these things. But I like the fact that, you know, our wellness day in our residency group is that we get to just hang out in the park that's by the hospital.
Yeah, mini golf.
Mini golfing, right? Yeah, mini golf, which is a great one. And bring food, you know, have a couple beers or whatever, you know, and just like call it a day. And that for me, like, I don't know about you, it helped me reset sometimes when we did that. I was like, oh my God, this is like a, you know, a little reset that I got from work. And I can go back to, you know, doing what I like to do. When we had that thing in med school, it was just like the most ridiculous thing ever.
It's like aggravating, right? It's aggravating because you're just like, where's the actual time for wellness?
Right. And then when you talked about, you know, assessing some of the underlying drivers of burnout, I think something I failed to mention when we're talking about ways that we've experienced burnout. I think another part where I really felt bummed out in working in intern year was being on the floor, and I had a few patients that were homeless and who were better. You know, I finished treating, you know, they came to the hospital, they had an infection, so they spent a whole lot of time in the hospital. And, you know, they have a room, they have heating. This is winter time too, right? Heating, you know, have food, everything. And then when it was time to discharge them, I was trying to get them to, you know, situate it into like a halfway home, some kind of something besides just being, you know, on the street. And, you know, I think maybe I mentioned this before, but when I told him that he's better, you know, I told him you're better and we're trying to discharge you, he was sad. You know, like, it's like some that feeling that, like, you know, you help this person and then actually discharging them is not really a positive thing for them so much. There's this like social thing out there that like is going to probably end up bringing them back to the hospital.
Right? Yeah.
I think that really was a contributor to some of my stresses and some of the burnout I experienced in intern year. So that when you're talking about, you know, systemic things, I think even some of it might not just necessarily be what we do in the hospital itself, but also, you know, as a society, thinking about how we care for the most vulnerable in our communities, that is another important thing.
Those are the similar experiences to the ones I had in med school.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked about the systemic level, and I think one thing that I would like to add to the systemic thing is that this wellness and programs shouldn't be something that is done reflexively to, you know, seeing burnout, right? It has to be proactive. We have to prevent that stage, right? That stage where, you know, prevent people who have come to the hospital. You're very enthusiastic about their job, right? You don't want them to get to the point where they're like in this chronic stress, right? And then get into apathy and just like habitual burnout, right? So these solutions really need to be proactive, right? So putting that aside, you know, we'll talk a little bit about the individual level, right? What we need to do as individuals, you know, in addition, not instead of the systemic things, right? In addition to some of the systemic changes, is that we really need to kind of like find coping mechanisms, right? Where we can get relief from our stressors, right? And, you know, whether it's recuperation via some kind of relaxation or sport or whatever, right? And then for some of us, it might also look like, you know, coming, returning to reality and abandoning what we think, you know, our ideas of perfection is, right? Because we tend to be people who are like type A, you know, personalities. We're people who want to do everything and want to help and we want to be perfect at what we do. And for some of us, it might look like we need to step back, reorient our mindset in those ways. So in terms of relief from stresses, I think from what we, you know, you and I read about and, you know, out there is, you know, you want to try and have some focus on relationships, whether it's relationship at home or relationship in the workplace. You want to find, it's not so much about quantity, even like a lot of quality time that you can spend with family or friends. You want to make that something that you look forward to. That has been shown to help people be able to just have a satisfaction with their work-life integration, which is one of the, you know, parameters that we talked about with the study, that what they measure was satisfaction with work-life integration, right? So it is important that, you know, we try and have those focus of those relationships, whether it's family, whether it's friends, or even within our court. In our work groups where we're at. And I think that's good for us for residency in Radong, right? Where I feel like we do spend quite some time like hanging out. We're doing a Friendsgiving thing, right? On the 12th. Yeah. We're doing a Friendsgiving thing. Yeah, that should be a good time. So, you know, those are some of the things that, like, you know, as individuals we can look up to and just help us to be able to relieve some of the stresses, right? There was some of this these readings out there, like looking at people who experience some burnout and how they're able to manage or cope with it. About a third of them talked about, you know, having some kind of spiritual practice, right? Where whether it's religious, you know, whether it's like your own spiritual thing that you do, or even this wellness, you know, mindset, having a wellness mindset, right? People who are attentive to nurturing their own spiritual selves, right? That can be not so much a distraction, but another aspect of your life besides work, right? That you look up to nurturing. So if you have that as another goal, right? You know, sometimes you might not be able to, you know, get out of work to, you know, for 2 days or the whole weekend, right? But you might get a day where you can, you know, focus on, like, you know, doing those kind of things. That can also help. I think personally for me, being able to go to church on Sundays, right, it's a thing that, you know, has been nurtured when I was growing up, and I keep trying to reinforce that even while I'm in residency. That's another thing that I do to have a purpose beyond what I just do in the hospital, right? So that's something that I think can be helpful for some people. None of this is supposed to be prescriptive, right? It's supposed to be guides, and, you know, Whatever works for people, I think that's all good. So you want to talk about some of the other relief from stress?
Yeah. Stress? Okay. So another one is really your attitude toward work. Sometimes it is hard to find meaning and fulfillment in work, especially, you know, with clinical practice, maybe you are a little burned out. So maybe you want to cut down your hours, work from full-time to part-time, still have that, still, you know, preserve that enjoyment in the work, but also prevent some of those stresses that come with working full-time. Maybe you're involved in more of the non-clinical aspect, such as education, could be medical student education, resident education, education for staff or patients, community education, and research. Clinical research, lab research, you know, some of those aspects that of what you do can actually be more fulfilling, and could be a lot of fun in a just a totally different way.
Right.
And so basically you want to increase your time spent on those fulfilling aspects and discontinue those time spent on your more unfulfilling aspect.
Right.
And another thing is really self-care. Like we talked about before, you got to take care of yourself. And these self-care practices like exercise, self-expression, whatever your creativities are, with writing, art, knitting, whatever they are, making a podcast. That is true. Yes. Making a podcast is an expression. We're doing it right now. Adequate nutrition, sleep, medical care, professional counseling, therapy. So all of these really activate, you know, you're really trying to cultivate your personal interest in addition to making sure that you're able to continue with your professional responsibilities well. And, you know, I will say I personally, you know, I started to practice learning meditation. I do it every day now, and I actually find it really helpful for me. It's like 10 minutes. Right. I can't say I'm like the best, but you know, it's helpful. So just, you know, I think it's always a work in progress. I think we're all trying to change things and improve ourselves with this self-care. I'm sure you are as well,
Hilaria. That ties into your, you know, spiritual practice too for you, right?
Yeah, like, you know, it does. It definitely does.
All right. And I know last year you learned scuba diving last year, right?
Yeah, I did. That was fun.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool that you were doing that. You know, I was like, that's a different outlet. I don't know how many of us actually like just get up and, you know, learn scuba diving. So that was really cool.
Yeah. I will actually add, I used to go to the lessons at 6 a.m. before I went to work, but it was like I made it work, and it made me look forward to going to work. So,
that's really good. That's really good. And I probably, like, you know, the last thing that, you know, we can talk about is like having a specific life philosophy, right? I think you know, as individuals, we want to help people who are sick, right, get better, right? That's good. But also, you need to also be able to find a balance between that and yourself, right? You don't want to burn yourself out, which is essentially what we've been trying to talk about. So you need to, mm-hmm. you know, find your own values and act on them, right? So for some people, it might be that I never take work back home, right? That's can be a value for some people. So, you know, you gotta like, that comes with some kind of time management, for example. If you want to reach that, hold that value important, right? You have to really figure out what time management, how that's going to work out, right? And like you mentioned, for some people, that might actually look like they work part-time, right? And that's okay if financially that's something that you can, it's feasible for you, right? And if it's not something mm-hmm. that's feasible for you, if you know, you might be working on spiritual practice or focusing on relationships as a way to cope and relieve stresses while you're still working full-time. But over some period of time, if you've had enough savings, so if you're working on some like saving money and investing your money, right, and you're getting a little bit more financially independent, that can be a way that you can transition to, you know, working part-time, right? And making sure that you, at any level, you're combining all sort of mechanisms, all sort of solutions to kind of help you remain refreshed, to help your mm-hmm. patients, to be there for your family and friends, and more importantly, to be able to get refreshed every day and look forward to what you want to do, right? So yeah. I think that's that, like having that philosophy, you know, finding the things that are most important to you and, you know, trying to combine them with your work and seeing the places where, you know, some of them may come together and they might not really work. You have to make trade-offs. And I think having that mental exercise and doing that can help you know what you need to do when you're actually in that, you know, situation where there's a conflict between work and your life balance, right? So I think that really can be helpful. And like I said, you know, some of it sounds easy and some of it may be easy, but some of it is also not easy. Like telling people to transition from, you know, working full-time to part-time, you know, it's not mm-hmm. always easy thing for people to do, or even changing their job description and working some time in the clinic and some time, you know, in education and teaching people. For some people, it might not be an easy thing that they want to do, right? So, you know, but these are some of the things that we think can be helpful.
Yeah, there's no sunk cost because you can change. You know, just because you're doing it for a while doesn't mean you can't change.
Right, that is true. We tend to think that once you put so much into something, you got to keep going kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And for people that actually have control of their schedules, you know, that's an opportunity to actually think about making your schedule, you know, at the beginning of the year, right? You know, for some people, that's out of their control, right? They can't really control mm-hmm. that as much. But for some people who are, you know, who can, you know, I think that's an opportunity. And even leaving bad practices, right? Places where workplaces that are not good and you're not going to be the one to reform that place, it's okay to leave, right? You know, so whatever works, I think, you know, for any individual is appropriate. Yeah.
So just to recap some of these solutions, number one, focus on your relationships, spend quality time with the people important to you in your life. Mm-hmm. Spiritual practice can be very helpful. Number three, attitude toward work. Find meaning and fulfillment in your work. And you might have to change the structure of your work, but that change could make a huge impact. Number four, self-care. Whether it's your physical health or your mental health with cultivating your own interests and hobbies. And number five, take a look into your life philosophy. Maybe you need to alter that. So that's all we have for you today. But we hope this talk and burnout and what burnout is and the solutions and what you can do have been helpful to you.
Thank you, Anish, for wrapping this up. For people who may have more questions about this, we are all trying to learn. So we will leave our email in the show notes. If you want to ask any questions, just shoot us an email. And if we don't know the answers to that, I think we can probably find someone who might, and we can direct you to that person. But thank you for listening to our series on burnout.
So that's all we have today for burnout, but I hope this has been helpful to you. You can email us. Our email is down below in the show notes. With any questions you have, comments, and if you have a topic that you want us to talk about, email us that too.
So before we leave, Anish, is there anything that you're looking forward to doing soon or have done recently that was very exciting for you?
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to this pie off that I probably will lose at. So for those of you who don't know, we're doing a Friendsgiving, and I texted the group that I'll probably make a pecan pie. And then Hilario said he's also making a pie. So we'll see who has a better pie.
I believe my specific words were that if Anish's pie sucks, I'm pretty sure everyone is going to have a good pie to eat.
Okay. Maybe.
Essentially, it's not going to be a competition, is what I'm saying.